This is Reuven Levy. We're continuing with our look at the book Gan HaShalom, The Garden of Peace by Rav Shalom Arush. We are in the Hebrew version. We are up to page 109, the beginning of the fifth chapter, just a little bit after the beginning of the chapter. We just started the chapter. So what are we saying? So this chapter begins by telling us the importance of respecting our wife, giving her kavod. Avarish explains that just like for a man, his main drive, his ta'ava, his lust, his yetzahara, is for women, unfortunately, women also have a yetzahara, and that's a need for kavod, a need for respect. Woman who doesn't get that is not going to be a happy woman. She needs it. And it's good that she gets it, because there's a level, it's there in order to make sure we're working on ourselves. That as men, continuously and constantly, are looking after our wives. If she didn't need that, then she wouldn't care so much. She'd be quite happy to be keep herself to herself, get on with her own business. She's actually a lot happier dealing with herself. She doesn't need me to get under her feet. And the contact would be fairly limited. And I wouldn't be working on myself. She would be quite happy without me. Or when I'm there, whatever. But now that Hashem has given her this need to receive compliments, to receive kavod, to receive respect from me, from her husband. So that then creates a situation whereby I need to fulfill that. I need to fulfill that lacking which is in my wife. This need, this hole in her neshama, which needs to be filled with her, with attention and love and respect from her husband. The Rav writes as follows: Ki tzurichim ladat she'isha tzuricha kavod. We need to know that a wife requires kavod, respect, utasumat lev, and attention, kmo avir l'neshama, like air to her neshama. Right? It's not simply a question of she feels good when you tell her nice things. She needs it like she needs oxygen. Hagever choshev, if a man thinks, ani tov, I'm pretty good, ani mevi parnasa, I bring in parnasa, I bring in income into the home, ani ozer b'chulei, I help out, etc. V'hu choshev sheze maspik, kadei sheishto tia meusheret, and he thinks that this is going to be enough to make his wife happy. And he's wrong. Aval hu eino yodeh, but what he doesn't realize, shekol ma she'aseh, everything that he does, im eino yodeh alatet leishto et tusumat lev v'kabod, if he does not know how to give his wife proper attention and respect, zek ilu lo asaklum, it's like he did nothing. Ishto umlala miyueshet ushura, his wife is broken and in despair. Even though I'm helping out, even though I'm bringing parnasa, even though I'm smiling and I'm being nice, if I don't know as a husband how to give my wife proper attention and respect, then it's as if I did nothing. What does that mean? So I have to give the proper attention, not negative attention. Negative attention is that I want something. Right? If Rav Arish was speaking just earlier, and he says that a husband whose attachment to his wife is through lust, that my main attachment through my wife is because of her physical beauty and my attraction to her physical beauty, so I'm not giving her good attention then. I'm feasting my eyes, I'm looking after myself, I'm giving myself attention, I'm not giving her attention. Right? Now I can't lie to myself or pretend to myself that I'm giving her attention when it's really not coming from a good place. That's not real attention, and that's not what she needs. And that's not going to do anything for her. In fact, probably the opposite. Okay. So now the Rav comes on to a different problem. It says, many men say to him that they're not able to give their wives compliments. Why not? Because they don't want to lie. Okay? People who are working on themselves and they know that that Torah says distance yourself from lies. Keep away from lying. It's a bad attribute. Everybody knows that. So we have a Yetzer Hara, and the Yetzer Hara crops up and says, the Yetzer Hara always comes dressed as the Yetzer Tov. Right? It always comes dressed as a holy rabbi telling me that this is the best thing to do. You can't lie. It's the Yetzer Hara. What does the Yetzer Hara say? Yetzer Hara says, you can't give your wife a compliment and tell her she's the best cook in the world. Because she's not. That would be a lie. You can't tell your wife, we're going to see specifically, he's going to bring here, that she's beautiful if, right, really she's not so beautiful. How can you say that? Ki mechamach ein libam shalem im hamachmaot hanal. Einam yecholim laram. So these people say that since their heart is not complete with these compliments, right, it doesn't fit well with them. They can't believe it completely, so they can't say it. Can't say something that I don't truly believe. Either because, out of principle, I refuse to say things which are lies, or out of practicality, I just can't get myself to say something that I don't believe in. I'm sorry. And it's not from such a high principle point, but it's from a reality. When I speak what's on my mind, and I don't speak things which I'm making up. Right? So I can't say something that doesn't ring true to me. Lamashal, for example. Ketzad yagid la shehi yafa imena yafa? For example, how can I tell her that she's beautiful if she's not beautiful? How can I say that she's well organized if she's not well organized? So these husbands that consider themselves to be ones who pursue truth need to learn from many statements from our rabbis. And they will learn that there are very many true compliments that they can give their wife. Just because a person might think that he can't say that his wife's the best cook in the world, so that's it, so he can't compliment her now. So just from that point of view, doesn't mean that you can't give your wife compliments. Just have to find a different compliment. But we're going to learn that even some of those compliments you can still say. You can still say. Okay. Hayofi shela. So let's pick out an example is a woman's beauty. Yaduha ma'ase mirabi Elazar, v'nosha rabbi Shimon, she'pagash adam mechora. Okay. So there is a story that's taken from the Gemara, where Rabbi Elazar, who's the son of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and he meets a man on the street as he's traveling. He meets a man who's very ugly. Ramalon, he says to him, Kama Mechua Ata. He says to him, how ugly are you? Right? Rabbi Elazar is a very truthful man. And he was surprised at really how ugly this person was. So he said to him, wow, how ugly are you? Isn't that amazing? Amar lo otar adam, that man said back to him, Lech emor la'aman she'asarti kama mochoe kli zeh she'asita. He said to him, go tell the person who made me. Go tell the one that made me that he made something, a very ugly vessel. Right? Hashem made me this way. Go tell Hashem. He's the one who made me. Shema Rabbi Elazar et tochachato v'tit bayesh v'od. Rabbi Elazar heard this rebuke and was very embarrassed. Ki be'emet sedakotoish, because in truth the man spoke correctly. Shereim abore barato imsuazu or acheret zeh yofi shelo. Because in truth, if Hashem Yibarach created this man in such a form, then in truth, that is his beauty. That is his beauty. We can anu lomdim. From here we can learn. She'im adam yamin she'ashen barach barayat ishto b'tzura zo. That if a person, if a husband, believes that Hashem created his wife with this particular form, as he hachi yafe b'alam, then she is the most beautiful in the world. Because it's Hashem that gave her that type of beauty. And Hashem makes the most beautiful things in the world. As he aisha, therefore she is the most beautiful in the world. Hashem only creates beauty. And if Hashem saw fit that this is what Hashem created, then it's beautiful. The fact that I don't have eyes to see it doesn't mean it's not beautiful. It just means I don't have eyes to see it. However, truth is it's very beautiful. And I can say it's very beautiful. I can say it's the most beautiful thing in the world. Because that is the real truth. Not my truth that I'm holding by, but I hold by a lot of lies. I think baseball is really good to watch. Right? It's a truth I'm holding by. It doesn't mean it's true. It just means that's what I'm holding by. There's a deeper truth that might be that it's a complete waste of time and it should go and do something more important. Right? And that's the real truth. I don't have to hold by my own truths which aren't actually correct according to Hashem. Hashem yofi achi mashlam. Because Hashem saw that this is the most perfect, complete beauty, bishvila neshama, shela, for her neshama, for her particular soul. And for her particular tikkun and that of her husband. Right? Hashem saw that this is exactly how she needs to be. And that's what beauty is. Beauty is exactly what it needs to be. Perfection. Hashem's perfection that he created the form in such a way that it needs to look like this is its beauty. It's the beauty of creation. And there's no more perfect beauty than that. Lachen hu yachol v'tzarich lagid la v'peh maleh. Therefore he can and he needs to tell his wife with a full mouth, right, with a true heart, at yafeh ma'od, you are very beautiful. At chananit, you are full of grace. Hayofi shecha moshechoti, your beauty draws me. V'im hi tagid stamat omed. And if she turns round to him and says, the husband says to his wife, and his wife knows that she's not classically a supermodel, and the husband comes to her and says, my wife, you're really very beautiful. And the wife turns around and says, you're just saying that. Clearly, I'm really not that beautiful. Right? Because she knows that, you know, according to the latest magazines and pop stars and whatever, that she doesn't fit the mold. She's now in her mid-50s and everything doesn't look like it looked like when she was 25. And she says, you know what? You're just saying that. So what does he answer? Yagid la, he should tell her, al ta'am va'al reach ein lidvakeach. Right? There's an expression that on taste and on smell, you can't argue. Zer talat tam shali, this is my taste. Ulefi ta'ami, and according to my taste, atachi yafe b'olam. According to my taste, you are the most beautiful in the world. A person cannot argue on taste. Taste is subjective. If I think this tastes good, it tastes good. You can't argue and say it doesn't taste good. according to me, it tastes good. And therefore, a husband can say to his wife that, in my opinion, my taste, you are the most beautiful in the world. I don't care what everybody else says or what everybody else thinks. Well, that is true. And that's most important, because ultimately the wife wants to know that her husband finds her attractive. If she is a holy kosher wife, and she got there by being married to a holy kosher husband, then she's not interested in what anyone else thinks. Right? She doesn't care whether or not the man on the street would find her classically attractive. That's not relevant for her. What is relevant is whether her husband finds her attractive. And if her husband is able to say, with complete truth, which he should be able to say, that according to his taste, she's perfect, she's the most beautiful woman in the world, then that's it. She is.
That's easier to do when it's your soulmate, too. It's not only easier, like, it's more difficult, but I mean, like, it's that person's perfect match. So,
When the husband knows that and realizes that. Right. When the husband realizes that it's the other half of his neshama. Right? And that's that. If he loves himself, he loves his wife. Right? So to speak. Right? It's like turning to looking at your hand and saying, "You're really ugly. This is a really ugly hand. It's part of me. Why would I say such a dumb thing? If I actually value myself, I look at my wife, I see the other half of my neshama."
But also, there's no one else in forever in the universe for that.
Right there.
It's the perfect one.
Right. And if I don't see the beauty in my wife, then I should go to the field and start crying. Right. That I can't see the beauty in my wife, I can't see it. Right. Beauty's not. Hopefully, we as men learn. We'll see that beauty is not the shape of her nose, the shape of her ears, right? Whether or not her skin is smooth, that's not beauty. Beauty is what shines out, right? Sarah Imenu was the most beautiful woman in the world, the Pats, at the age of 90, right? Not because maybe she had the prettiest nose, or the shiniest skin, or the shiny hair, which is probably put away anyway, but because she shone beauty. Her neshama shone out of her such beauty that it's hugely attractive. And the truth is, someone with spiritual eyes knows that a base woman has no beauty. It doesn't matter what she looks like. There's no beauty there. It's repulsive if you're looking with spiritual eyes. And Kal Vachomer, a woman who is very holy, shines beauty into her 60s, 70s, 80s, right? She's shining beauty. It has nothing to do with the physical body. Yeah.
But aren't we also saying, according to the story that you told earlier about the man, we're also saying it's physical beauty too. Because
which
man was rebuked by saying, he said, "You have a problem with the way Hashem made me."
Right, so we're dealing with it on two levels. So first of all, we have the level, the intro level. The entry level is us who still look at the physical beauty. So even if we're looking at the physical beauty, we should know physical beauty is from Hashem, and if Hashem made you look like something that is not classically attractive, then that's still the most beautiful thing, because that's the way Hashem made you. And that's also beautiful, because that's Hashem's creation. All of Hashem's creations are beautiful. Right? And they're perfect. They're exactly how they need to be. So even from the basic level, the way the physical body looks, I can still say that it's truly beautiful. But then on a deeper level, I should hopefully then get to be looking at what's beyond that. Right? As a man, I'm going to be in a very sorry state if I'm looking for physical beauty. Because at some point, the physical beauty is going to disappear. And it's either going to disappear after 5 minutes, depending on my own imagination. Right? and depending on what test Hashem puts there for me. If I'm looking for someone who is the most beautiful woman, then it's not going to take very long for Hashem to test me by letting an even more beautiful woman walk in front of my face. And suddenly I'm not married to the most beautiful woman now. I used to be. But now there's someone else. As now, if I'm working in an office and Hashem's going to test me, he's going to put in the next door office a woman who is, technically speaking, more beautiful than my wife. And if I'm going for beauty, and that's my main thing, then now I'm in trouble. What am I going to do? I'm now in a conflict. I actually prefer the way this woman looks than the way my wife looks, based on looks. So... Doesn't mean what?
It doesn't mean that you want this woman more than you want your wife, just because she's more beautiful.
But it depends how I'm valuing those things. I can say that woman A is objectively more beautiful than woman B, than my wife. I can say that objectively, maybe objective, on a purely physical comparison. And it doesn't have to mean that I'm more interested in one than the other. It doesn't have to mean that. But it will mean that if that's what's interests me. If I'm looking, if that's what I consider beauty to be, if I consider that the physical beauty, then I'm in trouble, because I am going to say that. And I am going to be more interested in someone who is more beautiful.
That's every man's yetzer.
Right.
If you look, it's going to affect your heart.
Right, and we can't avoid that. We can't say, I'm one of those men who place internal spirituality over beauty. We can't say that. If we've learned Briti HaShalom, Rav Shalom's new book, and we've worked on it for years and years and years to completely nullify our Yetzer Hara, then maybe, I'm not saying we will, but I'm saying maybe there's a possibility that you could say that. But for everyone else in the world, which is all of us, that haven't done that, and we haven't nullified our Yetzer Hara, then we can't say that, because we have a Yetzer Hara, and our Yetzer Hara will see an attractive woman and say, she's very interesting. No?
I view Rav Arush's book on Briti Shalom as being that once you don't look, you close your eyes to whatever, everything that's out there. Okay, then you're only with Hashem. And that's what his goal, or our goal, in the way, is supposed to be in life. Everything in life is Hashem. The only way to get there is by closing your eyes to everything that is in this world.
No.
We're missing
the whole point. The book was written on one subject, on one topic.
Yeah.
He says, by the way, it's also good to not look at your neighbor's brand new car, because that's also going to interest you. And by the by, in terms of the book, less than 1% of the book is talking about other things. 99% of the book is saying man has one main lust, and it is women. And the only way you're going to get over that is by not looking. Why? Because the Gemara says that man has a small organ that if you feed it, it grows. And if you don't feed it, it gets satiated. Right? And that's the same idea here. If you feed it, meaning you look, you see, and you... So it grows, it stays, it grows. Right? That ta'ava, that desire, stays and it grows. But if I don't look, it withers away, it dies after a while. It's not there, it disappears. And therefore, if once it's disappeared, then I can look around and it's not affecting me. But until that happens, and that takes a long time, it's like one of those weeds in the garden. So you're not watering it, it's not going to die straight away. It's going to stay there for a long, long time before it withers and dies away. Eventually, it's going to wither and die away. Right,
if you don't, it won't affect you.
But if you looked at a woman, so Rav Arush says now that if a naked woman was sitting on his lap, it wouldn't affect him at all. It would be nothing, right?
And the only way to get that is by going to the extreme. You don't think it's
yes, Yes, 100%. It's not even a possibility. It's not even a doubt. That is the only way. The Gemara says, the only way to get there is to kill your Yetzer Hara for that lust. And while that Yetzer Hara is still alive and kicking, it's there. It's going to pounce. As soon as it gets a chance, it's in there. The Mishnah says, the eye sees the heart desires. It's going to happen.
Is looking at a woman asur, or is it what might result from it asur?
It's asur if I get benefit from it. So if Rav Arush looks at a naked woman, ledugma, right? It happens, right? People who do conversions have to be in the mikveh when they're being dunked. So it happens, right? There were situations in, right? But they're not getting benefit, hopefully. They're not getting benefit from it. It's not a sore for them to do it. It's not a sore for three rabbis, a beit din, to come into a mikveh when a woman is being converted and she dips in the mikveh, right? They try not to look until she's under the water, but whatever, right? So, if Rav Arush, it's not a sore. It's not a sore to look. It's a sore to get benefit. Even to the extent it's a sore to get benefit from looking at a woman's finger. If you see a woman's little finger, the Gemara says, and you get benefit from it, you enjoy seeing that, then you did something a sore. But if you looked at the whole body naked and you got nothing out of it at all, then it wouldn't be a sore. Because it's not the looking that's a problem, it's the Yetzer Hara that's a problem. And until we get rid of that Yetzer Hara, we're nowhere near being able to look at a woman and not enjoying what we see. It's very pretty. Women are very pretty. They're very attractive. Particularly in this modern day and age, where they dress up very nicely and they do their hair and they wear clothes that are attractive. That's what they do. And we're attracted to them. And Rav Arush says, the only way you can get out of that lust, that desire, is to close your eyes. And if you close your eyes for long enough, not meaning walk around blindfolded, but close your eyes to not look. You're going to fall, you're going to look, and you're going to stop. But closing my eyes enough, it's going to go away. Because my desire has gone away. Because if I can do that, if I can close my eyes, then it's evidence, it's proof of the fact that I don't want to see. Initially, I'm closing my eyes, and I still do want to see. But I'm trying, I'm closing my eyes. But really, I still have a desire, I still want to see. But I'm closing my eyes anyway, because I know it's the right thing to do. And I'm trying. But I still have the desire within me. But eventually, that desire too is going to walk. It's going to leave. It's going to go. Because once I've closed my eyes enough, the memory is going to fade. Why am I doing even bothering doing? Why am I looking? You're right, this is so dumb. Right? But that takes a while. That takes a long time before that understanding kicks in. But once that understanding kicks in, then I actually don't want to see anymore because I don't need to see. Doesn't do anything for me. I can do without it completely.
Again, what's the purpose of my doing this? To get over my ta'ava for women?
Yes.
Or to get
closer
to Hashem?
My task in life is to get over my ta'ava for women. Hashem gave me Yetzer Hara, various different ones. One of them is called lust for women. Another one is that I get angry. Another one is that I'm arrogant. He said, you've got to get rid of the ball. If you want to perfect yourself and work on yourself, you've got to stop being arrogant, you've got to stop being angry, stop being selfish, etc., etc. The greatest, strongest, biggest one is the lust for women. A person can ignore that one and say, you know what, I'm working on arrogance, I'm working on anger, I'm leaving that. He can do that, it's free choice. But if I'm doing that, I'm missing the main event.
If I work on what Rav Arush is telling us, it basically means that I have to change my life in such a way that I can't live in the neighborhood I'm living in, that I can't daven in the shul I'm living in.
I disagree.
Why?
I live in the same neighborhood, I daven in the same shul, I just don't look at the women. I don't look at the women in the neighborhood, I don't know the women in the shul anyway that you can see. So you can for sure be in the shul. Because unless you have women sitting next to you, which I don't think, right? It's not in your shul.
After shul, we have a sikha together.
So you don't need to look. Don't need to look at them.
And I don't have to look at them when I'm speaking to them either. And
you don't have to speak to them. You don't have to speak to them.
Time.
You don't have to speak to them. Who says you need to speak to them, women?
Because we're brought up that
You're free. I'm brought up with a lot of things.
That if they ask you
I understand.
A question, you answer.
You're free. I understand.
And to be friendly at a meal.
I understand.
Three people
but there's a
difference.
There's a difference. There's a difference between being friendly, answering questions, which are all holy objectives, and conversing with a woman. Conversing with a woman, the Torah says, is not a good idea. And so what I'm saying is, I'm choosing how I was raised over the Torah. Fine. If I want to choose how I was raised over the Torah, then that's fine. But you know what? I wasn't raised correctly. Just because I was raised in a way that it goes against Torah, I should stick with that. My parents taught me that it's okay to drive on Shabbos. That's the way they raised me. I know the Torah says not, but you know what? I go with what my parents raised me. I go with, in my neighborhood, it was okay to not eat with a heksher. So that's how. It was okay to eat fish out in a restaurant. That's how I grew up. Your feet, it might be how I grew up. Doesn't mean it's right. Doesn't mean I have to hold by it. Yeah, but what are people going to say? Top. So nothing comes free in life. Everyone's got tests. What are people going to say if I stop eating out? What are people going to say if I stop eating in their homes? Your feet. So I've got a choice. I can go with Hashem. Or I can go with convenience. I can go with social norms. I can go with what my friends are going to think of me. And that's a big test. But I'm not going to get anything for free. Hashem's not going to make it so easy that anyone can just attain the heights of being fulfilling everything I need to fulfill without any test at all. It's a test. It's a test. When I went to work, when I started to become shrum, I had a test. In my office, a complete secular law office in the city of London, I had to go in wearing a kippah. Only there's quite a few Jews in that firm, but I'm the only one wearing a kippah. Right? That's a big test. If I do this, there goes my career, there goes my partnership chances, there goes right. But I have a choice. It's harder when the Jews come, right? Right. And so, but I have a test. I can either choose social nicety and my career and what are the people and all the things that, or Hashem says, I hear you, it's going to be hard. I hear people aren't going to like it. Right? I hear you're going to potentially lose out in this world, so to speak, that you think you're going to anyway. You don't. But you think you don't. And that's the test. That's the test. Right? Whenever we move anywhere in Judaism, any movement towards Hashem is gonna cost us somewhere. Or we think there has to be a klipa, there has to be something that you have to break through, which looks like it's gonna cost you. The truth is it doesn't, but it has to look that way, because if it doesn't, then we're all gonna go, we're gonna run in the direction of Hashem. And that's it, we're all going to be Moshe Rabbeinu, we're all going to be Rabbi Nachman within 5 minutes, because it's easy, just follow all the advice, and we'll vet, but we can't, because every piece of advice, I'm going to come up against a brick wall. What, you want me to speak to Hashem? People are going to think I'm crazy. Right? You want me to go in a mikvah? People are going to think I'm a lunatic. Nobody does that, only we're, right? Every single new piece of Kedusha that I take on, I'm going to have to fight against a big Yetzer Hara that's going to give me 101 reasons why it's not appropriate for me to do that. And they usually, not always, but usually involve what is so and so going to say. That is one of his biggest weapons. What is so and so going to say? And basically, it means that I put so-and-so above Hashem and above myself, because I want to do it. And I'm putting XYZ above me and above Hashem. And it's very hard, and I know that. And if I struggle with that for long enough, I'm going to break through. I'm going to say, enough is enough. I'm going to say, I don't care anymore. This is my life. I've got one life, one chance. I'm doing it anyway. And I'm going to break it. But I have to be honest with myself, and I have to say the reason why I'm not doing this is because I'm worried about what my wife will say. The reason why I'm not doing this is because I'm worried about what my friends will say. And I have to be very honest. If I'm very honest with myself, it should be that I'm not going to be able to live with myself for very long with that conflict. And something's going to have to break. But if I'm not honest with myself, then I'm going to not change anything, because I'm going to lie to myself. I'm going to say, you know what? It's not appropriate in my community. It's not appropriate. I'm going to give it different. I'm going to describe it differently. That's not exactly the truth. And according to the lie, I'll live with that lie. The reason why I'm not doing it is because it would alienate my wife too much, and I need to have shalom by it. And I'm going to create this whole big construct of a, and it's not true. The truth is, I am scared what people are going to say. That's it. Bottom line. And if I hold by that truth, I'm going to go to that. I can't believe I'm scared of people. My whole Judaism, my whole life is based on what other people are going to say. And I can't live with that. And eventually I'm going to break it. Right? Just like that I broke the same thing when I put the kippah on. I couldn't live with myself. What happened, my story on that is, when my child was born, I took off time from work. Took off a big chunk, 3-4 weeks. Big chunk of time to take off work. And I wore my kippah every day in the house and around where I lived. Every single day. Right? Completely. I was like, before then I used to only wear it at home and take it off at work. But I wore it for a whole period. So what happened? So the next day after that 4-week period, I came into work, I took my kippah off, I got off the train, I went to work. I couldn't live with myself. Couldn't live with myself. I hated the whole day, I screamed at myself. And the next day I said, put my kippah on and never took it off again. Because I had that conflict with the truth. The reason why I'm not doing this is because I'm worried about them. I'm worried about these other people. How can I not? And I gave up on all the other stories that I was telling myself. We'll continue Bezrat Hashem tomorrow.